Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PBD Cast, the only podcast that's brought to you live and indirectly from Providence, Rhode Island, via Columbus, Ohio. I'm your host, John Orlando, and welcome to episode 107. Before I talk about my guest, I just would like to say that I am somewhat happy that old man Winter has finally reared his ugly and frozen face. Boy, that was very dramatic, wasn't it? But anyways, yeah, it looks like the temperatures here have been going down in the evenings, kind of cold in the mornings, definitely a little bit chilly in the afternoons, and I'm glad that it's here because, as I'm going to share here on episode 107, I have a little project going on in my backyard of my house, and it's a project that I've wanted to do for a couple of years, and I finally decided, oh, what the hell, I'm going to do it. And that is that I am putting in an ice rink in my backyard. That's right, an ice rink. I purchased a kit from a company called NiceRink.com, and they had what is a very, very basic package. It costs $350, and it's basically it's just going to create a 20 by 40 foot piece of ice in my backyard. There's not anything fancy to it. There's no boards. There's no fancy borders to it. It's just flat out just a slab of ice, but I am excited to get it installed. I have part of it done. I don't have all of it finished yet, but I'll let you know how it goes here on subsequent episodes of the PVD Cast. I've always wanted to do it because I thought it would be a good way to keep my skating skills a little bit sharp since I'm not playing as often, as often as I would like. And, you know, for me, I was never really a super great skater to begin with, so what limited subpar skills I have, I want to keep them on that level of being subpar. So, but anyways, I'm looking forward to getting it all installed and everything, so I'll keep you up to date on how that project is coming along. So, but okay, let's talk about this episode of the PVD Cast and who I'm going to talk to. I'm going to talk to a gentleman that I met at Independence Day back in September, and I feel bad that it took forever to get him on the podcast, but he finally, I finally remembered to give him a quick email, and he was all about coming on, and I appreciate that so much. But cartoonist Josh White is going to join me on this episode, and we're going to talk about his couple of books that he has completed, Vision Quest and Bad Year, and we're going to talk quite a bit about the current project that he's working on called The Love of Men. As you're going to find out, Josh is a guy who follows the old adage of writers write about what they know. Josh is a guy that likes to travel. He's a guy that likes to have adventures. And he takes all of his experiences and puts them into his projects. And I think that that's certainly something that is very unique and very welcome and refreshing because there's not superheroes. There's no crime. It's just a slice of life, if you will. Very relatable, and so I was happy that Josh got a chance to come on. So without any further ado, let's throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I'll be joined by Mr. Josh White.
Trivia Geeks, the Unpredictable Game Show podcast is back with a brand new season. They've got a new host, new games, and a new day and time. But that's not all. Now you can download their companion app, TrivNow, and play along in real time. Watch Carrie on YouTube as she tries to convince her partner that his Dark Knight hasn't risen in years. Listen on Diamond Club and Alpha Geek Radio, Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern. You can also follow the show on Facebook and Twitter and get all the latest updates and showtimes.
All right, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PBD Cast. I am sitting down this evening via Skype with Mr. Josh White. Josh, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm not doing too bad. Not doing too bad at all. So, you are a cartoonist. You have a couple of different projects that you've been working on, but let me start it off with the question that I ask most creators. What got you started in this endeavor? What made you decide that you were going to start creating comics?
Well, it started with Joe Sacco. I was browsing around in a bookstore in Yellow Springs back around in 2006, 2005 or 6, and I saw one of his Palestine series of books, and I saw that it was a comic. It was well illustrated, and it was for adults, and it was telling a very compelling story in a way that only comics could, and it blew my mind right there. I was like, wow, this is, I didn't know this existed, and it planted a seed, and then a couple years later, I was making my own comics.
Okay. Now, you do have a background in graphic design, correct?
I've got a digital arts degree. Okay. From undergrad. Yeah.
So was that something that you didn't think about? Were you in that industry before you started creating comics?
No, I've actually always been kind of a blue collar working person all my life, and have pursued art as a passion on the side.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So what was the first thing that you decided to start sketching out?
My first comic that I made was back in 2007, and it was during 24-Hour Comics Day, and it was about traveling. I had traveled to New Mexico from Columbus. I relocated there, and I was just making a comic about what reasons I had for relocating at the time.
Okay, all right. Was that maybe the start of maybe some of the ideas that you have put forth here in recent years? For an example, I know you have a book called Vision Quest, where it's about a gentleman named Alan who's kind of hitchhiking across the United States. So was that your experience rolled into that particular book?
Oh, yeah. I definitely started the whole ball rolling. One of my passions is travel, and a lot of my work focuses on those themes.
Well, I think also too with the story of Vision Quest too, you mentioned that Alan's trying to recapture something that he had. Do you want to elaborate for some of the listeners as to what he's trying to recapture?
Right, he's in this position where he has left home and he's relocated to a new city, started a new life, and then he kind of gets to this point where he wonders why he left it, why he left it all behind, and he starts to kind of yearn for what he had before. And that book is kind of an exploration of what happens when you try to go back and recapture what, like maybe you've gone on a new adventure and you're not having as good of a go of it as you thought you would, and you start looking back, and it's kind of, the book is an exploration of, well, what happens if you actually turn around and try to go back?
Okay, all right. Maybe even you can use that as an analogy probably for relationships as well. I think that there's obviously some folks that think the grass is always greener on the other side of the fence.
Right, yes, or the grass is greener back on the other side of the fence that you just hopped over from.
True.
In this particular book, Vision Quest, the protagonist is interested in trying to rekindle an old love, go back to his old city and start, see if he can restart his old relationship, which he kind of ruined, because he hadn't been having the luck he was hoping for, starting new relationships. And he kind of found a new, value. He kind of learns to appreciate what he'd left behind.
Mm-hmm. So let's also talk about another one of your books. The one that actually, when I met you at Independence Day this year, the one that I thought was very interesting, Bad Year. Would you like to summarize that real quick for the listeners?
Yeah, that is a book about a young lady in Japan who has a mental breakdown, a psychic break, and it doesn't go well for her. Her parents don't understand what's going on. She's kind of becoming an adult. He's like a young woman becoming an adult, still living with her parents, and her parents get angry at her acting out, put her into a mental institution, which does not treat her well, and the story is kind of how she deals with all that and how she eventually kind of makes her way through to the other side and recovers from all that.
So what was your inspiration for this tale? Had you heard of something similar, or was it something else, maybe your own opinions on mental health issues or whatnot? What was the inspiration behind writing this book?
This is a lot of the events. It's all based on something that happened to a friend of mine.
Okay.
So I interviewed her to get kind of her up close story about what had happened to her. And I originally was going to do something more kind of like reportage, like just talk more specifically about what happened to her. But then I realized that it probably worked better if I did a novelization and fictionalized it and just kind of loosely based it on her experience.
Do you think that in America we treat mental health issues with the right outlook, right insight?
It's hard for me to say too much about that.
Okay.
I'm not really an expert, but from the research I did for this book, which is more about like what goes on in Japan, from my research, it does seem that Japan is a little bit behind.
Okay.
Where we're at, where we have more of an we're not perfect.
Sure.
We're far from perfect.
Sure.
But we have more of an integrative approach where we try to integrate people with when they have mental health issues, keep them integrated in their current lives rather than trying to scoop them off the street. Whereas in Japan, especially in this rural area where the book is set, their mindset is still kind of back where we were back in the 60s and 50s. You know, if you think of narratives like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and Girl Interrupted, where they had a very draconian way of dealing with, you know, people processing things differently.
Mm-hmm.
So she was encountering this this kind of older draconian system where they were still lobotomizing people frivolously. They were keeping people locked up for frivolous reasons because they had phobias of people who had mental illnesses.
Okay. I think that... Personally, I just asked that question because, you know, I think that while obviously I guess I didn't make the connection that your friend was in Japan. I apologize for that. I just felt that, you know, a lot of times I think too, still in America, we still have a little bit of a hang up about freely talking about mental health issues when lots of people have them because life is stressful sometimes.
Right. It's like I said, I'm not an expert, but it's like, you know, sex and death and money and mental health is also one of those in politics, a difficult to address issue in America.
Yeah. Yeah. Most definitely. The Love of Men is another project that you're working on now. It is about six individuals and a dog. I like the fact that a dog was thrown in there, and I'll talk about that in a minute. As they struggle to kind of get through some more recent events, the book itself is placed, the setting for it, excuse me, is during the Great Recession.
Mm-hmm.
So how would you describe The Love of Men to somebody?
Well, let's see. I'm in the process of writing it now. I've got like maybe 100 pages, about half of the book finished, like totally artwork finished. It's okay. Six friends and a dog are encountering the difficulties of the Great Recession. You know, the economy starts falling, the banks crash, and what happens to their friendships? What happens to their... It's kind of a slice of life. It's kind of like a Cassavetes film where you're just seeing real people deal with kind of existential difficulties by we're looking at their interpersonal interactions. We're looking at their friendships, how their friendships changing. Are they're kind of grouping together. Now in the book, one of the ways they decide to cope is they kind of all travel. They're all kind of spread around the country at the moment. And they start traveling to see each other and get closer. And that's one way they deal with it. And they're also, you know, looking at ways of how they're going to employ themselves and how they're going to go forward in the economy. And but mainly it's slice of life. It's about these characters and how they're working with each other.
And if I am correct, you have been posting some pages on your own website and also through Twitter, correct?
Yeah, on my Twitter and my Tumblr and on my website, you can go to the book, the link for the book, and you'll see all the current pages are up. for you to read through and take a look at.
So why did you put a dog in the story? That's what I'm curious about. Why? Why the dog? And is that representing something? Is it an analogy for something? Why the dog?
That's a good question. I thought it would. I think it led. It kind of adds something kind of like playful and humorous. Because the dog does. It's an ensemble cast book, so you're getting. There's no central character. So you're kind of getting a round robin, scene by scene, character by character view, and as the characters start to group together, you start to see them together in the scenes, and you kind of see how they all start to move towards each other. In the book, and in the book, the dog gets its own scenes and its own storyline. So it's just like all the other characters, and eventually it kind of runs into the rest of them, and it has a place in the gang. The book is kind of about how we form tribes, you know, like when times get tough, we form tribes and we stick together. And I think, I'm not sure exactly why the dog is there other than it seemed to make sense.
Hey man, as long as it works out, who cares, right? You know? I did notice with The Love of Men that the settings are very different. As you said, each one of these friends is spread out around the United States. Are those all cities that you have ventured to? Albuquerque, I know New Orleans, Columbus, where you're based at. I think it was Dayton one of them as well, if I remember correctly.
Right. I think, yeah, at the moment, one of them was Dayton. I've kind of changed that. But yeah, the whole structure of the story is based, they're all based on true events, on a road trip that my friends and I took.
Okay.
So it's like, that's like if the true experiences formed the groundwork.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm drawing, you know, when I'm trying to create story elements, there's going to be a realness to all of it. But then I fictionalize it, so it runs all together smoothly like a story, mm-hmm. you know. So you can read through it, and you're not like, oh, why are all these idiosyncratic details in there? I kind of take away all that and just smooth it into a story that has, you know, a wider appeal. These are all locations I've been to and lived and traveled through.
Well, one final question about The Love of Men. I noticed, I think on two or three occasions, as I was kind of scrolling through your Tumblr and whatnot, there seems to be a recurring, I want to call it a theme, I don't know if it's a theme, but I'm going to call it that, a recurring theme of, quote, the vastness, end quote. So maybe explain to the listeners at home, what's your take on that? What is the vastness, if you can even explain that?
All right, I'm hoping, okay, since the book isn't finished yet.
Okay, don't spoil anything. I didn't know that question was loaded, sorry.
Well, it's not a spoilery thing, but it's like I'm trying to build a theme or a core concept.
Okay.
And if it ends up falling flat, I'll just go back and change it all. But the idea is that once, once there's like an economic crash or something like that, it's almost like it gives everyone a kind of, it pulls away all the expectations from people, like normal people, and you're kind of free to make your own decisions for a second because you kind of lost your automatic track. Like when everything's moving along, gangbusters, great economy, you're just kind of moving ahead at your job, doing whatever you're doing. But as soon as there's like, you know, the power goes out or your hot water goes out or the banks crash, all of a sudden you have a chance to reevaluate, right?
Sure.
You'd be like, oh, wait, what am I doing? And then you start to see what in the book I'm calling vastness, like this, well, what if you kind of open your mind to possibilities and then start writing your own script for where, you know, what you're going to do going forward. So it's kind of about that moment of when the rug is kind of ripped out from underneath of you, and then you got to stand back up and kind of figure out what your next steps are.
Sure. And that makes sense. And I like that you alluded to the fact that my hot water tank is out right now. My hot water heater. Thank you, Josh. but you know what? Speaking of that, I have determined that, you know what? It's an inconvenience, sure. But, like my day's not ruined. You know, it's inconvenient, right. But my day is not ruined. So I can get on board with what you're saying. I can totally get that. So... are there any, you mentioned it, you said that your books are very much slice of life, very relatable. Are there any other genres that you're interested in tackling? Or do you feel your niche is this kind of slice of life type of relatable type of story?
Well, I mean, that's pretty much my MO is like go out, have an adventure, take notes, write a novel. Like that's kind of that's my method. I have, however, you know, thought like, well, what if I kind of just sat down and like made a total work of fiction, whole cloth, not based on any kind of thing I experienced. And that might be something that I get into like once, you know, I've kind of have this backlog of adventures and stories I want to like turn into novels. And then once that runs out, either I've got to go out, have more adventures, or I need to like, you know, start making shit up.
So I see what you've done. You've created a vicious circle for yourself that you constantly have to have unique adventures. Otherwise you have no more source material. I see what you've done.
Well, I think I was imprinted when I first, you know, got turned on to Joe Sacco. I looked at what he was doing. He went out, had an adventure, got the story, right, with his little sketchbooks, then comes back and like, you know, creates the work, his book. And that kind of really had an impact on me, like how he did his work. And I think I just kind of like, it really stuck with me.
Who else has been an inspiration for you besides Joe Sacco?
A lot of people. Hard to, let's see, I'm looking at my bookshelves right now. There's a lot of writers that are very inspiring to me. But I don't know, like right now I just started looking at reading Jonathan Safran Foer's new book.
Okay.
Here I Am. It looks pretty exciting. But to kind of answer your question more better is like, have you seen the work of Jillian Tamaki?
I am not familiar with her. No, I'm not familiar with that individual.
Well, she does very much the kind of same thing. She'll kind of slice of life, graphic novels, amazing artwork, and I don't know, just really impressive comic storytelling. But yeah, there's just a lot of people working in graphic novels right now that are doing great work, and it's just a great time to be working in this medium.
Yeah. So, what are some of your future projects? Can you just dabble and explain maybe one or two of those? I know you just said that you have plenty of adventures that you got to get to. Is there any that you can kind of give us the heads up on?
Well, the two big ones that are next is one is going to be just straight up freight train hopping adventure story.
Oh, so wait a minute. Did you hop freight trains?
That was kind of the apex of like, I went on a 2-year kind of traveling quest, and my goal ended up being, I want to learn how to, you know, safely ride a freight train and have that experience. And I did. And now that'll be a book.
No, wait, I have to ask, how do you safely learn? Do you go and find a teacher for that? Like, do you hang out around the rail yards and go, hey, who can teach me how to hop this freight train? Like, I'm very fascinated by this. How does this happen?
Well, you'll have to read the book, but I can't tell you. You hang out at the right places. You know, like, you'll find out. And you find someone who's been doing it for like 20 plus years, and they look happy and healthy, and you're like, oh my God, this guy has the secret. And you're like, it took 2 years of research until I felt like, because I didn't want to do anything that would be dangerous, but I wanted to have this great adventure. So after 2 years, I felt confident enough in the research and the information I had to just go for it.
All right. Okay. I didn't mean to. I found that a fascinating story. I cannot wait to read that. What was the other adventure you were going to mention? You said there were two big ones.
Well, the other one is I want to do one about the forest defenders in the Pacific Northwest.
Okay.
Part of my adventures, I spent time living in intentional communities and living co-ops in Oregon. And I got to know and kind of be deeply embedded with what certain people would call eco-terrorists, but who I would call forest defenders, people who climb up in the trees and protest them being cut down, which is a huge kind of social impact, you know, environmental impact issue in the Pacific Northwest, kind of perennially. And I did eventually get to spend a couple nights, you know, tree sitting up in a tree. And that was just a really amazing experience. And I wanted to kind of base a book, not just on my experience, but on kind of centered around a campaign where there's a logging campaign coming up. And then the forest defenders, how they organize amongst themselves, and then also their advocates in the legislature and, you know, lawyers that are on their side to mount a campaign against, you know, big lumber. So there's the all, you know, the it's like a Star Wars theme where all the rebels are against the Empire, and neither, you know, both sides are good and evil, and both sides kind of butt heads, and how that all washes out.
You know, and I think that you mentioned something I never thought about. I'm familiar with that type of issue, that type of situation. I guess I never thought that those individuals, the forest defenders, as you called them, also have their own legal defense team. I think that there's the stereotype they're just out there by themselves, you know, but they have a whole organization behind them that's fighting for them as well. I guess I never thought about that.
Well, it's the only, it's the way to efficacy, because if it was just left to their own devices, I mean, these are anarchists. Like, they would... it would be hard for them to all stay together because they all start infighting. Mm-hmm. But if they can organize and rally together and then also work with people who believe in them, who are on the other side in the legislature, in, you know, who have, you know, money and resources and who are lawyers, and they have those connections, that's when you can actually stop a logging campaign. You can stop, they can actually have effectiveness. And there is a history of battles won and lost, and, you know, since it is possible, whenever, you know, the lumber, whenever the, you know, the forest department opens up a tract to the loggers, everyone starts rallying together, and they start organizing, because there is a chance that they could stop it.
Okay, all right. I'm going to mention that I was really impressed with this. I'm holding it up. Nobody could see it, I know, at home, but Josh has his own handmade business cards. I got to say, Josh, that is a nice touch. Why did you decide to do that? Because that's got to take a lot of time, I assume.
Well, okay. I got my MFA in comics.
Okay.
And part of the MFA is, part of my training was a lot of training in self-promotion.
Oh, okay.
The tendency for an artist is just like, well, I want to make my book and not really worry about promotional materials. But they spent a lot of time teaching us, you know, well, here's how you make, you know, whatever, a website, how you make business cards, how you make flyers, all these different things that you need to make, how you table at a convention. And then I found the way that works for me. I feel I like a personal touch, and it just seems more of a personal way to connect with someone, to give them a hand-drawn a business card rather than just to print a whole bunch of them up somewhere and hand them out.
Yeah, no, I was very impressed with that. That was the thing that I noticed. That was the second thing. Like I mentioned, Bad Year was the first thing that hooked me, but I dug that. I was like, wow, that is really ingenious. And the second thought was, holy cow, it must take you a shit ton of time to do those too. So, you posted on one of your, I believe on your Tumblr, maybe I saw it on Twitter or whatnot. You post a lot of cooking photos on Instagram. So, are you passionate about cooking?
Well, that is my day job. I am a cook.
Oh, okay.
And right. I am passionate about cooking and about food. I used to be a construction worker. But then I switched over to the food industry back in 2006, around the time I started doing comics. And it's been kind of like what, you know, puts food on my table, so to speak. And yeah, so Instagram, you know, since it is the social media for having fun and smiles, I figured that's where I should post my cooking photos.
What's your signature dish?
Let's see. I roast a lot of vegetables. That's of roasted vegetables on rice with a special sauce. That's kind of my thing.
Okay. Gotcha. What would be some of the pros and cons to being an independent creator? I know that might have put you on the spot there a little bit. What's some of the negatives and the positives?
Well, it's a good question. Okay, the pros are that you get to fully, scratch that itch of self-expression and exploration of a medium. If you have that desire, if you read a book, and you're like, you like the book, but then you have this extra feeling of like, I want to make a book too. I should be making a book. And being an independent creator scratches that itch. You don't lie awake at night thinking, well, I wish I started doing this art project or whatever. The cons are, it challenges you to be self-starting, because, you don't put on a suit and go downtown and, go up the elevator to work at Nationwide every day. Everything isn't quite laid out for you. You need to go and find it and put it together a lot of times for yourself. Unless you happen to be independently wealthy, and that's a different story. But I think the saying, when I was in the Pacific Northwest, the saying was, like, in Portland, everyone in Portland has three careers, their passion, and then a job, and then a third job. Everyone has, like, three. Being an independent creator is a good opportunity for you to you have to put together a career for yourself.
Okay. So I assume with your path into comics, you've had a lot of successes. You've had probably a few failures. What would you say right now has been your biggest success?
Well, I'm most proud of completing books. Okay. When I started out, I spent a lot of time doing this and that and making smaller stories and really just kind of punching around everywhere, just trying everything out. And before that, I spent, 8 years in music and a lot of different, I've always been trying to crack into what is going to be my creative expression on this earth, because I've always had, like, deep felt feelings about this. And then creating these two books has been kind of a culmination of, like, okay, yes, finally I've done it. That's been a very, very satisfying feeling.
Now let's go to the other end of the spectrum. Are there any failures you would like to mention, or?
It's important to fail.
Sure, I totally agree with you. I'm 100% in agreement with you on that.
I'm trying to think of, like, a total biff, just a total goof that I've made that would be educational. Because, pretty much anything can be kind of folded in. I think of the things that I've made the most corrections to recently in my work, I think would be, I did a lot of work, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, I did a lot of work that was not very concerned with being sensitive to a wide audience.
Okay.
Or readers who are not like me, or like particularly being like a white male.
Yeah.
And then through, opening my mind, spending a lot more time with a lot of different people and opening up and sharing my work with a lot of people, I've learned that I want to be aware of people who are unlike myself reading my work and how that would affect them and what kind of sensitivities they would have. And that's really informed my more current work to be more inclusive. In its approach, not just be like, I'm this white guy and this is how I feel about things, which is kind of how I started.
So, The Love of Men, you said you're halfway through with the book. Do you have a completion date for maybe the listeners will pick up a copy?
I've been telling people summer 2017.
Okay.
I'm kind of pushing myself to at least have most of it done by then.
Okay. All right. I'm going to put you on the spot. This is probably going to be the hardest question as we're getting close to our wrap-up time. Best place you've ever traveled?
Oh.
Ooh. Oh my! It was a stumper, wasn't it?
Well, I think this is actually kind of easy. The most I've traveled a lot of really great places. I loved traveling to Tokyo, but I think the most fascinating travel experience I had was when I hopped a freight train and we went across the Mojave Desert in the middle of the night, and then ended up in South Central Los Angeles on the train in the morning. And that was very sublime to kind of like just get off the train and walk around Los Angeles with our backpacks and figure out, you know, what we're going to do with our day.
Oh man. Wow. That is, wow. You through the desert at night. That's an adventure. I'm telling you, I can't wait to read that. I really can't. I'm fascinated by this hopping of trains. So Josh, is there any upcoming places you're going to be? Any book signings, any conventions or anything, or do you want to plug any social media or anything along those lines?
Well, I would say everything, you can get everything just by going to my website, www.joshwhitecomics.com. And that'll give you all my socials, all my social medias, and links to the books. The first two books you mentioned, there'll be links to where you can buy them. And then the current work that's in progress, there'll be a link to where you can just read what I have so far. Mm-hmm. And then I also post what I have so far on my Tumblr and my Twitter. And on Instagram, I'll post what I'm cooking and also process pictures, like, you know, just pencil sketches and different things I'm working out as I'm working on the book. So it's a good way to just kind of like keep track of the informal stuff.
There you go. So right there, joshwhitecomics.com. That's your one-stop shop, so to speak, to find out everything this man here is working on. So Josh, any last final words?
Not really.
Okay. Except for maybe buy your books. That would be...
Yes, buy the books.
All right, well, Josh, thank you very much for coming on. I appreciate you sitting down and chatting with us.
Thanks for having me, John.
All right, and with that, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of this break, I will be back to wrap up this episode. So if you will, please stick around. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen, my conversation with Josh White. A really easy, laid-back dude, and I think the conversation was very easygoing as well, and I appreciate that. I cannot wait to read about that tale of Josh hopping freight trains. I'm really excited for that. I just think that's something you don't hear of very often. But nonetheless, hey, if you want to check out Josh and his work, all you got to do is go to joshwhitecomics.com. I'm going to put a link up over on the links page of the pbdcast.com website. And everything that you need to know about Josh is there, his Tumblr, all of the social media, where you can purchase his books if you want to. I mean, let's be honest, it's Christmas time. Maybe you're looking for your unique gift, and that would be an awesome unique gift if you picked up Vision Quest or Bad Year, the two books that Josh has available for sale. So there you go, ladies and gents. But hey, but before we get too far along, I have something that I want to talk about. As I am piecing together this podcast, I received an email from Eric Murphy. Now, many of you know that Eric was on the PBDcast just a few episodes ago. Actually, it's episode 103. And he was talking about his great documentary, Trafficant, the Congressman of Crimetown. Well, he emailed me to let me know that this great documentary is going to have a showing right here in Columbus, Ohio. That's right. Next Wednesday, December 14th, at the Gateway Film Center, 7:30 is when it starts, you can see this awesome documentary. And even more impressive is that Eric will do a live Q&A via Skype right after the viewing. So, hey, if you have not yet seen this film, first of all, why not? But secondly, here you go. You got an opportunity to see it on the big screen. So come on out, December 14th, the Gateway Film Center, 7:30. You will not be disappointed. So you got to come on out. You want to see a great documentary, I guarantee that you will be thoroughly impressed. Okay, one other thing that I would like to talk about real quick that I didn't talk about last episode, and I feel a little bit bad about it. A longtime listener, fan, and friend to this podcast, Rich
my good friend from Steubenville, over the Thanksgiving weekend, I was invited by him to check out his new band as they perform around the area. The band is called Restless, and I got an opportunity to see them on the Friday after Thanksgiving. And I gotta say, pretty good performance. I enjoyed myself. Now, the band does not have any original music, but they do play some covers, and they do a darn good job with them. So I wanted to say, hey, I appreciate the invite, Rich. It was a good show. I'm saying it here publicly on the PVD cast. And if you're interested in the band Restless, Restless Rocks, I believe, is the page on Facebook where you can get all the information about them, where they're going to be. There's a few videos up them of performing. They got a big New Year's Eve gig coming up, so there you go. Check them out, if you will, please. All right, now it's time, ladies and gentlemen, as you can hear the music of playing in the background. Oh, yeah, it's time now for Orlando's Fave. All right. This is the part of the podcast where I tell you about something I dig, something I like, something I think you should check out. But I'm going to be honest, I hope that you never have to check out what I'm going to mention. And I know I'm probably going to get some flack for this. I'm probably going to get some heat for this. But my fave is probably a fave that is going to be bizarre and a fave that probably some people are going to scratch their heads about. But my fave for this episode are plumbers. Yeah, that's right, plumbers. As you heard Josh allude to in our conversation, I have a small problem with my hot water heater. And let me just tell you, while it's not the end of the world, and while it is very inconvenient not to have a hot water, it does suck. So I appreciate those men and women who are plumbers, who at any given hour, on any given day, will come on out to your house, fix whatever needs fixing, so that you can have all the comforts of modern day society, like running hot water. So that's my fave for this episode, plumbers, a noble profession. And I know that some of you probably are going to give me some grief about that. And you know what? You have every right to. Go right ahead. You know how you can give me some grief? Very simply. Shoot me an email, johnorlando@pvdcast.com. You can tweet me any disgust that you may have at PVDMVP. Check out the Facebook page for the PVD cast. That's at facebook.com/PVDcast. And by the way, I shouldn't be a negative Nancy. If you want to tell me great job, I agree with you, John. Plumbers are the best. Or whatever. That there's your outlets right there. Hey, don't forget that the PVD cast can be heard on 5 different outlets. Obviously, PVDcast.com is one outlet where you can get this great podcast. It's also available through iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, and SoundCloud. And if you get the opportunity to listen to the PVD cast, you need to rate, review, and subscribe. That will help me out tremendously. In fact, even tell a bunch of people about it, because that also would be pretty keen of you. With that being said, I'm going to close up shop. I thank you for listening, and I will chat at each and every one of you later.